It is time for Firearm Friday, a weekly podcast that brings the firearm and outdoor industry straight to those in the community. And now here's your host, the Tactical Leprechaun himself, Chris Stover.
TGIF crew, this is Chris Dover, and wow, we got a good one today. We're going to talk to Kurt Whitworth with Huntigo, and Huntigo has a revolutionary new shoot-through bore cleaning product called Clean Shot. But first, let's talk a little reloading. Anyone who knows anything about reloading knows that Starline brass is the best brass to have. It's no wonder that many boutique ammunition manufacturers choose to use Starline brass. Whether you're looking for common calibers or those little quirky niche market calibers, Starline brass probably has what you need. For more information, jump over and check out starlinebrass.com. All right, we've got Kurt on the line with us. How are you, Kurt?
I'm doing well, thank you. How are you?
I'm great, actually, doing really great. I've just recently ran across your products, just recently ran across the Clean Shot shells, the 20 gauge and 12 gauge. Never knew something like that existed. Very, very cool product. I'm glad you're here today to kind of talk about those. And what I'd like you to start out with, because when I really am curious about that, it's not something that you see on every shelf in every store in America. So I'm kind of curious how the concept, how the thought came to your mind of this is something that the market needs, you know, and how the business started in, you know, humble beginnings, so to speak. So you mind telling us a little bit about that?
Yeah. I'll go all the way back to 2006. I've always been, you know, I was a creative guy from the beginning. I was creative. I owned a marketing company, or had been marketing communications for 34 years. So always been creative. And so what I had done is I had always carried like a notebook with me, because if an idea came into my head that I thought was a really cool idea, I could write it down on a piece of paper and at least get it out of my head and onto a piece of paper. And then I could always come back to it and look at it. So I formed Huntigo Limited as a company that I would be able to take my inventions one day and put it into a company and sell it to the market. I have a couple other patents unrelated to Clean Shot, and that was my plan. So while I was working another job and had a company, I was always side projecting inventions and ideas. And, you know, I mean, I hate to say, you know, I'm that kitchen table engineer, but I am. It would be, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning and I'm like, oh, I got this great idea. Let me go downstairs. I got to write this down. I don't want to forget that this is a good one, or, you know, dream about something or just see something in your head. And so that is what I had kind of programmed myself at, you know, to do. So back in 2012, I can remember the day, December 12th, 2012. I was sitting at a table, and I wish my story was, you know, I shot all the time and my gun was dirty and I just couldn't get it clean. And I have to figure out a better way to clean my gun. Again, being the inventor guy or the creative guy, I did shoot, you know, and I did clean my gun, but the idea for Clean Shot came to me just as a vision in my head. And it sounds really crazy. I saw something, of a shoot through bore cleaner. I thought it was a cool idea and I drew it down on a piece of paper, a little notepad. I still have this. I found it a couple months ago up in my bin, but, really, so it just started with a little scribble on a piece of paper, drinking a Diet Coke in the right frame of mind. That was on day one. On day two, I expanded a little bit farther. On day three, I flew home from Vegas. And by the time I got home, I had a 7-page business model, market expansion, product development, you know, vision in my head. So once that business model started in that way, I've just been chasing it ever since.
Wow, you—that's a lot of work that you put in.
But it just happens. It's a lot of work. But the bottom line is, it just happens, right? So when it's flowing, it's flowing, and when it's not, I get it. But bottom line is, you know, if you're just sitting there on a 7-hour flight from Vegas, you're just writing down ideas. Had my headphones on, had a Coke or whatever, and just man, it was, you're flying. You're just literally, and just it's coming out, and I'm writing it down.
Right, and you're a little bit blessed to have the best of both worlds there, because you've got, these inventive ideas, and then you also have the business savvy to be able to then get into the marketing and the business plan and the stuff that you actually need to get a project up and off the ground. Just an idea is not enough, unfortunately.
But I'll be honest with you. When I used to own a marketing creative company, what you're selling is human time, right? You're selling creative services, right? Writing and photography and graphic design and printing and all that kind of stuff. When it comes to manufacturing and distribution, and mass merchant and dealer distributor negotiation, I mean, I will say this, it is, even though I did work for companies like that, now living it and doing it, it's last year, let me say, 17, the end of 17 was crazy, 2018 is even crazier, 19 is going to be really crazy, but it's all good. It's all good. I mean, it's a enormous learning curve, and we're, just negotiating our way through it, and, there's challenges every day. But really what I, I think it's the thrill of the chase, right? You've got an idea, from mine to market, right? From an idea on a sheet of paper to being in retail outlets, and then expanding it and growing this possibly into a global platform or business. That's the, that's addicting.
Right. Yeah. Now from your concept to the first prototype, the first tangible thing you could hold, what kind of time frame was there from those two points?
Well, so what I ended up doing was I began going online and looking for something. I mean, that's always, I will say, I can probably give you 50 examples of something that you think of or like, oh, that's a really cool idea, and then you go online and 3 hours later, oh, there it is, someone already designed it, or oh, it's already on the market, so what I did is I started looking it up. I couldn't find it. I began looking into patents. I've probably read 2,000 patents at this point. I taught myself how to read patents and kind of like blow through a lot of the stuff and jump right into the abstract and, look at the drawings and you completely understand. So there's things out there that were possibly along the same realm. But I knew that, distinctly different that what my product was and how it performed. And then also too, I bought some books on how to reload and taught myself. I bought a loader and I bought a bunch of products, like from Ballistic Products and Midway USA, like reloading authorities, right? So I bought some products and I just started studying WADS. And I will say, so it probably from a piece of paper, I mean, really what you end up having to do is you do all your research, you can't find it, you read a bunch of patents, and then you apply for a provisional patent. At the same time, once you apply for a provisional patent, you have one calendar year. I mean, not 12 months in a day, but 12 months. I mean, one day later, you're off the table. So you apply for a provisional, well, then you have 1 year to apply for a utility. So I applied for my provisional because I couldn't find it. And then I, at the same time, I was cutting up WADS and studying. And at some point, you do get to that point where you have to load it and shoot it. And I did. And I'll be absolutely honest. I read up on it. I knew my math. And I loaded a shotgun shell. I put my shotgun in a sled. I strapped it down and I put a string on the trigger and I hid behind the tree and, I pulled the trigger.
Right.
And I'm like, okay, the gun didn't blow up. It looked pretty, normal. And then I felt pretty comfortable that what I was doing was, was down the right path ballistically. But on the other hand, you fail, right? So you design it, it fails. So you take that information and then you go back to the table and you design it and it fails, and it design it and failed. And so I did that for probably 2 years.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, again, it was an addiction, right? So you're on it. It's not every day. I mean, it's, you know, often, and it's every week for sure. But, you know, you get it to the point. Let me say, I re-engineered it to the point where I understood the tensile strengths of polyethylene. I studied gunpowder propellants with nitroglycerin, nitrocellulose, and carbon molecules. I understood the pressure between a payload and your propellant. And then also to the, you know, kinetic energy that happens in there. So I had to, again, you're reading, you're learning, and you're studying something that I was trying to achieve because I saw the potential of the benefit to the hunters and the shooters as a potential product that could go on the market.
Wow.
Does that make sense?
That makes total sense. And that was just wow at the amount of work. Just sounds like a lot of work and a lot of really geeking out, right? I reload,
yeah.
and I'm sure there's numerous folks out there that reload as well. That's watching or listening to this right now, and I don't, you know, very few of us probably geek out that much over stuff, but you know, you had a purpose with that, and it was kind of an out of the box, you know, off the wall purpose. A lot of us are not looking at firing something that actually cleans as it fires. That's a very unique concept. So I can just imagine the amount of R&D that went into it. Now, once the you know, you had the first product, I guess, that was successful or mildly successful at doing what you needed to do, how many times have you revised it since then, and did that require additional patents, or how did that go?
So I would say you're revising it, you're continuing to revise it all along until you get to a product that works every time, right? So for me, is I probably from like, you know, the original to where I was ready to go, like, okay, this is it. This is I'm done messing, you know, I'm done making changes, and I have all my mathematical equations and my payload and my propellants, all that stuff is all worked out. I'll probably say 30, 40 renditions.
Wow.
And I don't mean renditions of you know, construction.
Well, different load data, I'm sure, right?
Oh yeah, right. I mean,
links and of the WAD and
yeah, absolutely, like, yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, the bottom line is, you know, it's, if it does, you know, you have to be able to load it and close the shell and have everything tight. So, you know, that's all based off of the volume of propellant, how thick your gas seals are, how, you know, high your WAD is, how much space your payload takes. So, you know, you change something by a 16th of an inch, I mean, that changes a lot of stuff. So you know, I went into like single cavity molds, and I tested, you know, five different polyethylene makeups, you know what I mean? And so once you say, okay, this is the right one, then once I had that, I mean, again, you're probably, you know, again, you're years and tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars in, you know, in time and materials. But again, you're chasing it, you're trying to figure it out. So, you know, again, it 30 could be wrong, it could be more like 50, but bottom line is you're just continuing to develop until you have a product that you just say, this is what I can go into manufacturing with.
Now, along the way, until you actually got to the point that you were ready to break through with manufacturing and go to the market, were there other patents that you had to obtain along the way? Did anything change?
Yeah. So patents. So today I'm 9 patents into it, mm-hmm. And so you're always looking at
in just the one. That's in just the clean shot.
Yeah, just shoot through bore technology. You know, we're 9 patents into it. So I will say the original patent isn't what we're using today. It was one of the revisions as we went down the road. So as we would uncover something that needed to be changed, then I would have to apply for another utility patent. Again, then if I thought of something else that I think that might work in a different thing, but kind of pushing out the same theory, then what I would try to do is patent it. So again, I have a variety of patents. I'm using, let's just say, I'm using the center one, and I'm circled with patents that you know are other ways that I might be able to do this. But this is the one that I found that I could manufacture, and this was the path I was going down.
Gotcha. Okay. And yeah, that's I guess that's understandable, because as time goes along, I mean, I'm sure you probably run across different materials you can use in manufacturing, and whether they be more efficient or a cheaper cost or whatever the case may be, that can change that up. So yeah, I guess that's totally understandable. Now, once you had that golden egg, so to speak, and you were ready to go, you know, how did all that roll out? How did you go from, okay, I have something, I'm ready to go to market, you know, the manufacturing side of things is set, now it's time to get out there, try to get big box stores to pick up on it, whatever the case may be.
Well, I think even in the, another thing is, once you get to the product that works, I mean, you have to source out all the materials, right? So, you know, I have an injection molder in Michigan. I've got products coming from New Hampshire. I'm trying to think of where. I have some, like 2 or 3 different companies in Michigan.
That's a good point. And a lot of folks out there, when we talk on the industry side, are interested in that. Is everything pretty much sourced U.S.?
Yeah. Oh, the only thing that I outsource is my propellant, because it's a highly oxidized special formulation.
Right.
And so, again, because I need to maximize my compression and my burn off, that's a frequently asked question. But everything is in the United States, from packaging to hulls to primers to materials to gas seals to payload, every assembly. I assemble in Roberta, Georgia. So again, it's, you know, you have to source all the materials. You know, you have to buy volume in order to be ready to present this in front of a mass merchant, or, you know, again, if, you know, if the cost is too high because your components are not affordable or assembled at an affordable rate, then you've got a whole other problem on the other end. So, you know, we felt we had to at least get to some type of volume manufacturing, where, you know, again, I'll use an example. I'll produce 500,000 rounds at a time in order to, wow, you know, meet a certain price point.
Wow. And how long?
So for a specific product, I mean, I'm buying like 23,000 tons of payload.
Jeez, Louise. And for an order that size, or to manufacture that many, what roughly is the output, or what can the output be?
What do you mean output? You mean rounds?
When we're talking reloading, I mean, people go, well, I can load, you know, 400 an hour, or I can load 300 an hour, or, you know, the big manufacturers, of course, thousands and thousands an hour. But I'm guessing you have machinery, right?
Yep. Yeah, I don't. I outsource, grade. Again, in order to...
Oh, okay.
In order to manufacture and sell ammunition, first of all, we had to acquire an FFL Type 6 ammunition manufacturing license.
That was going to be my next question, since you were talking about a special powder. That one of my questions was going to be the powder, and you answered that, being a specialized powder. And then my next was going to be, because of the powder, did it actually fall under the definition of ammunition? So I guess both of those are yes.
I would say it does. And on the other hand, I'll say, well, I have to say it does. I mean, there's the old saying, you know, if it sounds like a duck and it looks like a duck, call it a duck.
Legally speaking, yes.
Legally speaking, right? You know, the clean shot is specifically designed to power scrub, trap the particles, and clean the bore and the choke and your porting of your shotgun, right? It is not, it's not, its intent isn't to hit a target or, you know, skeet or trap or anything. Now, I know it will, and I know people have, are, you know, they put stuff out there saying, hey, look, I hit a, you know, station five target, you know, and I broke it, because the velocity is, you know, at 1,050 feet per second, or, you know, that's for the 12 gauge, and 1,030 feet per second for the 20 gauge. Again, it shoots like a duck. It sounds like a duck, just call it a duck, you know?
Right.
So from that standpoint, I had to acquire a FFL Type 6 manufacturing license. Now, because I'm outsourcing it to an actual manufacturer of shot shells, they have an FFL Type 6. We subcontract that out.
Sure.
Hontigo ourselves doesn't load this. I went to someone who had like 50 years experience in loading ammunition.
Right. Yeah.
Now the volumes vary. I mean, you could go to a niche market manufacturer, and they can do 8,000 to 10,000 rounds a day, or you could go to a mass manufacturing where they do 12,000 an hour.
Right. And that's, I'm assuming you're not to that point yet.
Correct. We are not to that point yet.
We're getting there. We'll get there eventually.
Hopefully in 2019 we'll be there.
Right. That's a good problem to have, for sure. But yeah, I mean, I don't have a problem with the outsourcing. I mean, even with, you know, talking about having to get things out of the U.S., we've talked to multiple people in the industry that are like, well, we try to get everything here as best we can, but this one part, you know, it's like nobody in the U.S. makes it, or, you know, nobody here offers it, or whatever the case may be. So, when you outsource stuff too, you know, that's more jobs. I mean, you're yeah. obviously not that you have to deal with. And as a business owner myself, sometimes having employees that are not your employees is the best kind of employees. So,
right. I'm a super strong, I'm a firm believer in manufactured in the USA. First of all, when you're manufacturing ammunition, I don't necessarily believe you can manufacture and, you know, let's say I manufactured it in Europe. Then you have to import it back here. I mean, there's just so many ITAR regulations and, you know, legal stuff that you have to go through. But the issue was more of, I always, from the very, very, very beginning, have always been made in the USA, made in the USA. So you come across those hurdles where you say, like, I found this super high concentrated felt material that has, you know, steel shavings in it, you know, and I thought, man, that's going to be great. It will really help scrub the bore. You know, and really have a light abrasive to it, you know, more than a high density felt would. But, you know, it's manufactured in like Germany, you know what I mean? And so, you know, again, I had to find a solution here within the US. And again, even in that scenario, I mean, you're going to multiple suppliers, you're cutting samples, you're finding the right material. It's just, you know, it's just what you do. You're just chasing to find the right product that works, and then you test it thoroughly, and then once it's approved, and then, you know, there's a lot of stamping and cutting and, you know, pre-assemblies that all have to happen. So
right.
it's just the road we've taken.
Sure. Well, let's shift gears a little bit, get into the actual product, talk a little bit mm-hmm. about the use, and I guess a little bit about effectiveness and how it works. Is it more with the shoot-through technology? Is that more of a maintenance role rather than a restoration role? I mean, it's not for something that's rusted and set up for years, is it work as well? It take a bunch of those and it'll eventually get it done, or?
You know what, I will say this. So there, we put a post out. My brother-in-law had a shotgun sitting in his closet for 20 some years. He goes, I remember that shotgun sitting in that closet when I was a kid, you know what I mean? And it's still there. And so we took a look at it, and man, it was decayed. It was not that it was pitted, but whoever shot it 20 some years ago put it away dirty. Now I will say, I was very hesitant of shooting a clean shot through that, because it had been, you know, the moisture and the dust and the, you know, the carbon that had been in there had really bonded to it. Now, I will say we took a risk. We shot one clean shot, and it removed it in one shot.
Wow. Okay.
So the clean shot uses an external force of 10,000 PSI of outward. And I'll jump into the actual mechanics of how it works, and I'll try to explain it the best I can. But really, to answer your question, it's more of, I use this example. So if I went out and shot 100 rounds of skeet and I shot 100 rounds of trap, at the end of the day, I simply load a clean shot into my shotgun, I fire it, and it field cleans my gun in like a 400th of a second. Now, what I look at it is, it's a field cleaning device, it's a maintenance device. I'm a firm believer, and Huntigo is a firm believer in scheduled maintenance of your, and you know, maintaining your shotgun or any firearm. So what I do is about every 6 months, I'll break my shotgun down and I'll squirt some, you know, cleaner in there, maybe some Gunzilla or Pro 7 or a little Hoppies, get a brush and, you know, just run it a couple times, patch it out. But here's one thing I'll say. What used to take me 45 minutes to an hour in my garage to bench clean my shotgun, I now do in like 8 minutes.
Yeah, it's amazing how easy those jobs are if you actually maintain your stuff.
Right. So no matter what you're hunting, you know, you're shooting a large volume or medium volume of shells, I don't care if you shot 5 rounds through your gun, at the end, just fire a clean shot. Now, another thing too is, so I'll fire a clean shot, I take my gun, I put it in the case, I throw it in the truck, I drive home. When I get home, my wife says, we need to go grocery shopping, gotta take the kids to the soccer game, blah, blah, blah. Whatever the issues are that I have to deal with, like, you know, getting out into the garage for 45 minutes or whatever, or even, you know, 10, 15 more minutes, you know, hey, you know, I've been gone for half the day and now I'm gonna go out in the garage for another hour, whatever. The bottom line is, I don't have to. I know that my gun is clean, it's in my case, it's dry, and bottom line is my shotgun will be ready when I'm ready to use it.
Right, gotcha. Now, you mentioned about, we've talked about trap and you know, the skeet and that sort of thing. A couple of questions that I've got on the product is, the first is rifled barrels and how effective it is with that sort of thing, or even possible. And then next, with, you know, with shotguns, it's not, copper fouling is not really an issue, but, you know, lead could be. So, yep. How well does it handle rifling and then potential lead buildup?
So during the validation process, another thing too is was really important for me was that it had to fully cycle. Right, for semi-autos.
Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah, that was, and again, we went through a whole thing where, well, you know, it doesn't have to cycle, and I'm like, yeah, yes, it does. Like, it absolutely has to cycle. So it does. It cycles through. Let me say, I would say it cycles through all semis, but again, there's some Mossbergs out there that have a super heavy duty spring, and they shoot, you know, 3-inch, you know, shells with slugs, and again, they have their own complications, but I'll say is I haven't had an issue where it didn't cycle through a shotgun, and of course a pump isn't an issue, but and a lot of our test guns are over unders, and so again, I need to be able to break it open, see what happens, study the bore, you know, I mean, I need easy access to that. But you know, we tested it on a variety of smooth and rifled bores. Some of the, during the process, we sent out samples to a number of publications, Field and Stream, Guns Magazine, Wide Open Spaces, Truth About Guns is another one that wrote a review. Now, they are publications. I didn't pay for advertising. I don't advertise on any of them. And they took the opportunity to go out and test the product. And they shot, you know, they showed pictures of it before. They listed what they shot. They were shooting Winchester Extreme slugs in rifled barrels. They were shooting turkey loads. They were shooting target loads. I mean, the guy listed like 7 different types of ammunition in both smooth and rifled barrels. And what he would do is he would shoot one clean shot at the end of his test. And matter of fact, he even said, I even stopped running a patch through it, thinking that maybe I was helping the product out. He goes, I'll use a word he used, chromatic mirror-like finish.
Nice.
And I'm like, man, that's like, you know, lyrical, you know, music to my ears, right? It was really a great review. And, you know, to me, he would shot it, and he showed patches and gave us a very qualified review because he tested it pretty hard.
Right, gotcha. So you know, looking forward a little bit, I know you're optimistic about 2019. What are some things on the horizon for you?
So right now, we're in Walmart. We're trying to make more people aware of shoot-through bore cleaning technology. We knew that there was a challenge between ammunition and cleaning products, and what we've created is a brand new channel, right? So there's a whole new channel of shoot-through technology that people aren't aware of. So that's a challenge for us, first and foremost. You know, we originally talked to Walmart and you know, they put us out into 3,600 locations nationwide, which is wonderful. But, you know, again, if we don't have the awareness, what we have is almost like you are an example. Like you were in Walmart, you just happened to see it, and you're like, what is this, right? I mean, so not that you saw it through any type of advertising or online, you never connected that way. It was more of you saw it there and thought, hey, wow, that's a kind of cool idea. You know, I wonder what this is. So we're now looking at distributors and dealers. We want to get it down into the dealer level for the consumer to go to their local gun shop and be able to buy clean shot in the 12 and 20. Now, I will say this. We spent a lot of time over the last year developing the 9mm round. I think we're somewhere between 75 and 80% complete. We have a couple more hurdles, but it is our plan to launch the 9mm round in 2019. It'll probably be like September, October-ish of next year. But we've got engineers helping us with some of the ballistic issues. We've got some propellant experts that we're working through some mathematical equation. We've got some ballistic help in there, but I'll say is we're super, super, super excited about the 9mm. I think that you know, is going to be a game changer for us, because once you perfect the 9mm, then from there the 40, the 45, 38 will all soon follow. And so what I look at is we have a long-term projection of new product release. So, you know, if I look at the entire handgun line, we'll probably jump back to the 28 and the 410. I will say this, I have 3D models made of the 5.56 that I'm trying to work out some, you know, engineering aspects of it. So, I mean, there's a lot. I mean, I'll say there's probably 8 to 10 years. We could release 2 or 3 new products every year for the next 10 years.
Wow. And I'm sure that the metallic cartridges present a whole different
another.
Set of problems from what the shot shells went through. And when y'all get those going, I definitely want to have you back, because that's
okay.
That's we definitely want to talk that game, because that's as interesting as the shot shells as the clean shot shells are now to me, and I'm fascinated with, like I said, from somebody just coming up with that idea to actually getting it done in practice. The whole idea of a metallic cartridge that acts the same way is just completely out there to me. So that's cool. But go ahead. I didn't mean to step on
you. No, I was going to say, if it's out there to you, the weird thing is it's things that I dream about. You know what I mean? It's just like, it's a challenge. And so we're up for the challenge. I mean, we're taking it on. We're bringing in people. We're uncovering a lot of stuff, and we're excited. I mean, there's a 2019 is going to be a big year for us, and we're doing everything we can again to create awareness and get it down into the distributor and dealer. So anyone who's listening or could go to Chris's gun shop, at the corner of 5th and Main and pick it up in any town USA. I mean, that's really the goal. So we're going to continue to innovate products. We're going to continue to release products. We're going to continue to work on getting it to the consumer, and just do what we do. I mean, it's been exciting. It's been a lot of work, but bottom line is, it's been a lot of risk. Big risk, big reward, and we'll continue to chase it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure you're still with the patents are still coming, I'm assuming, with the metallic stuff, right? More and more getting added.
Yeah, I've got a meeting Friday with my patent attorney to go over 3 more that we're applying for.
Wow.
So, but again, it's just what you do, right? I mean,
you got to protect your ideas and your designs, without a doubt.
Yep.
And it kind of makes it a little easier to, I've always have concerns sometimes when we get into these conversations, because I'm thinking, hey, these guys have spent their life savings in most cases on these products, and here I am asking this question and that question, and I expect them to plead the fifth or say I can't answer that one, but I guess patents do protect you from that a little bit and give you a little more leeway to kind of talk more about how things work, because the thing is, the consumers out there are curious about that. You've got the early adopters with anything, right? They see something new and they've got to be a part of something new. But the vast majority of people, the ones that are really going to establish you in the market, they're hesitant. So they want to know a little more, and especially with something like this that's so unique, you've got to get it out there at least a little bit of how it actually works. And I think you've done a really good job at, without giving away the farm, so to speak, anyway, of explaining how it works. So, and it's harder to do through audio, of course. If you were able to show PowerPoints and slideshows, it would be a little easier explained, I think. So you've done well. You've done very well.
Well, I'll say one thing is that it's an interesting looking shell for the 12 gauge. We put it in a translucent clear hull, so when people look at it, they go, "What is this? Like, this looks different. I mean, what are all those rings and what are these pads and what is in this thing?" And so I think that it kind of draws some attention to it. The 20 gauge, I had to go with a yellow hull. Due to federal regulations, because that's the law. But I think the next production run, we're going to look at try to do a translucent yellow hull, so you can see its inner workings.
That's what I was fixing to ask. Is there a way around that with going with a little bit of translucent effect to it?
Yeah, there is, but then the stipulation would be, with if you have a specific hull made for you, like in a translucent, mm-hmm. you know, you may have to buy a half a million rounds.
Wow.
Or hulls, you know, wow. I mean, so it's a, you know, huge commitment. But we just need to, you know, get to that point where, you know, at our next production run, we will definitely be considering that.
Sure. Sure. And I don't know, I've never seen anything, but would it be possible to do, you know, part that's translucent and then another part yellow, like say you had a window in there?
I don't know about that.
Yeah, I don't either. I don't know with the manufacturer.
I don't even know if that's possible.
You know, like the if you've ever used a quart of oil, right? It has that little window,
like a little see-through part.
That little strip. If you could do like several of the skivs, I guess you call them, on the holes, you could do, you know, a row of those or something like that, a few rows of those, so you could see at least a little window in there. But I think that would probably be a little tougher on the manufacturing side than even the translucent yellow would be. So,
right.
Maybe you're thinking too far outside the box with that one.
Right. So, yeah, thanks for adding that complication.
Right, right. You're welcome. You can send me my royalties when they come in on that. It'll all be good. We're about up on time here. So
okay.
What I'm going to do is I'm going to give you a chance and let us know, let everybody out there know where they can find your stuff. What's the best way to get in touch with you if they have questions? And obviously they can find your stuff at Walmart. Is there any other place? Can they get it on the website? Just your normal spiel, as it would be.
Yeah. So we're available at about 3,500 Walmarts across the country. It's available in 12 and 20 gauge. Comes in a 4-pack. I think Walmart's selling for about $8.97. We also sell it online at huntego.com. That's huntego.com. On our website, we have a cutaway view to show you how it works. We've got some videos on there that show the product in action, dirty bore, clean bore. We've done a patch test video, again, showing you shooting traditional rounds and then with one clean shot. And then to me, in the video we say, the evidence is absolutely clear of the effectiveness of clean shot. Right now we are running a program, free shipping on any order through December 16th.
Nice.
All ammunition has to go ground, so I want to make sure it gets there before Christmas.
Sure. And great stocking stuffers, by the way.
Great stocking stuffers. Yeah. Yeah. For the hunter or shooter in your family.
Exactly. And for those out there that are in my family, I'm just letting you know, great stocking stuffers, by the way.
Right. You were just kind of broadcasting that out there.
Hint. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, Kurt, I do appreciate you joining us, and I was sincere. Once you've got the new products going and they come out, definitely let us know, and we'll have you back. But we have appreciated your time for sure today.
Thank you. I appreciate you giving me some time.
Thank you for joining us for another Firearm Friday. Don't forget to check out clovertac.com. There you will find all of our social media links, the blog, cool swag, discount codes, and more. If you would like to support our efforts as well as receive extra content and perks, check out Clover Tack over on Patreon. Have a great weekend, and we will catch all of you next week on Firearm Friday.